Welcome to the 20% True Podcast, Season 3, the Chicago Center for Supernatural Support. This is Episode 6, Jasmine. I'm Carolyn Rahman. Jasmine barely made it 10 minutes into her lifestyle changes group before she was on her feet shouting. How can you look me in the face and tell me to embrace it? How? I'm honestly curious. What is the train of thought that led you to think that's an okay thing to say to me? The silence at her outburst wasn't an absence of sound, but a change in the air, a thickening, a festering. Ravi the Bogart and Mila the menopausal succubus actively withheld eye contact as Jasmine swept through the group, looking for agreement. All she found was Tony, whose chair squeaked as he leaned forward, trying to contain his joy at the smell of drama, the taste of blood in the water. Jasmine swung back to Regina. "Tell me," Jasmine shouted, "tell me where you get off calling this an opportunity." Regina watched her through her dumb cat-eye glasses. She didn't cower, she didn't shift in discomfort, she didn't try to walk it back. There was no, "You've misunderstood me." Her unruffled, unapologetic face made Jasmine want to rip off her head. "This isn't some magical gift," she continued. "It's not kismet. I was violated. My future was torn away from me and it has ruined my life." Regina had unnaturally well-defined eyebrows that went too far down the sides of her nose. If she was drawing them in herself, why did she do that? Jasmine didn't usually care about people's makeup choices, but Regina's made her want to scream. "Could you sit down and tell me about that?" Regina asked. Like it was interesting? Like Jasmine hadn't just flipped back her chair and shouted? A hand circled Jasmine's wrist, squeezing once and then tugging her down. That was Bailey, who dragged Jasmine to group every week because it might be good for us, and we're both really close to having breakthroughs. That was nonsense. Jasmine was not close to a breakthrough, whatever that was, and Bailey didn't need one. Jasmine didn't want to sit down. That was like losing, admitting defeat, and she was way too ticked to settle down and be managed. But Bailey squeezed her wrist again, and Jasmine righted her seat. But she made the movement as much like throwing it as she could, and she crossed both her arms and legs as she plunked down into it, glaring at Regina. Maybe it made her look petulant, but good. Great. Jasmine wasn't embarrassed. Regina should be embarrassed that one of her group members had reverted to a surly teenager. "Thank you, Jasmine," Regina said. "What were your life goals 6 months ago, and why are they out of reach now?" "Seriously?" "Yes." "6 months ago, I was on the track to make the dean's list. 6 months ago, I was making a list of law schools to apply to." Regina nodded. "It's reasonable to have a rough semester." "Quarter," Jasmine corrected. "We do quarters." "Excuse me, a rough quarter, when you've had a trauma. I know the dean's list was important to you, but I know for a fact that you didn't fail any classes." "So what? It'll look bad on my applications that I didn't make the dean's list." "Lots of people get into law school who weren't on the dean's list," Jasmine snorted. "Yeah, third-tier law schools." Bailey groaned next to her. "What?" Jasmine asked. "You're doing it again. Could you please be less elitist? You're making me look bad." Jasmine tightened her grip on her arms. Bailey was making herself look bad by not pushing herself to her full potential. She was going to one of the greatest schools in the country, and she wanted to do what with it? Teach for America? "Schools understand that bad quarters happen," Regina said. "Yeah, when you can explain what happened. I was turned into a werewolf, and that's why I got B's. It's guaranteed not to get me a spot." "Wait," Ty said. "This whole time you've been complaining about your grades and you've been getting B's?" Jasmine glowered at him. Regina asked, "Have you made the list of schools you want to apply to?" "Why should I bother?" J- Jasmine, I'm sure you'll get into very good school if you apply. But if you don't even try, you definitely won't. It's not just getting in. Jasmine shifted forward in her seat. It changes where I can apply. Now I can only go to schools in cities with supernatural support centers. She counted them off on her fingers. Chicago, New York, Seattle, Atlanta, Houston. And Idaho Falls, Heather put in, smiling like that was helpful. Don't forget Idaho Falls. Who the hell wants to live in Idaho Falls? The population is like 80% supernatural, Tony said, so people who are into that want to live there. There are still a lot of schools in those cities, or within driving distance of those cities, Regina said. We could help you look, Mila offered. We'll get a U.S. map and draw circles around those cities. Anything within a 2-hour drive of a center. Mila liked actionable solutions. She liked making pro-con lists and doing the meditation exercises that Regina gave them to practice over the next week. And you don't have to be near a center, Bailey said. But Jasmine was still mad at her. Derek transformed in his basement for 4 years without a center. But he had Grant and his transformation sucked. He was a hot mess. He was a hot mess who maintained a high-profile career, doing what he loved, and made a cubic ton of money. That was beside the point. So Jasmine, Regina said, while it's definitely true that your options have been limited to some degree, a minor degree, Time muttered, it's not true that your future has been completely ruined. Just like applying to law school, your future is there for you if you want to reach for it. So the question is, why aren't you reaching for it? Why have you decided that everything is over, instead of working for what you have to get back on track as soon as possible? Why should I accept that this is my life? I didn't choose this. That's true, Regina said. Let's think of it this way. What would you do if you developed some sort of genetic disorder that required you to go get injections once a month? What would you do? Would you rage that everything was ruined, or would you get the injections and go about your business? This was a common refrain from the group. What if what happened to you wasn't what happened to you, but was something completely different that happened to normal people? As if there was a right way to react to a cancer diagnosis. And as if that were the same reaction you should have to a lycanthropy diagnosis. As if Jasmine knew how she'd react to having cancer, or as if she wouldn't be just a big defeatist crybaby. Those situations are not comparable, Jasmine said. Why? You didn't choose either situation. Both of them are completely treatable. What's different? What's different is that one is bad luck and one someone did to me. Someone else made a choice and that choice took my choices away. Regina nodded. So it's about having someone to blame. It was about feeling victimized, feeling helpless. Her study group had always met at a friend's apartment off campus. The friend always had an overabundance of Fanta. The friend had sworn off high fructose corn syrup, but the friend's mom either hadn't gotten the memo or was ignoring the corn syrup thing and kept sending her cases and cases of Fanta from Costco. Jasmine had left about 6 o'clock, which meant it was full dark, because in winter the sun set at 4:30. She'd just missed the shuttle bus, but she was too wired from corn syrup and too much homework, and she wasn't too horribly cold, so she walked. Her friend's apartment wasn't in a terrible area, but not a great one either. She held her keys popped between her fingers like serrated claws, the whistle the school had handed out at orientation tucked tight into her palm. Her chest had eased as she crossed the boundary of the neighborhood and onto campus proper, and she'd braced herself to cross the midway. The midway was a wind tunnel at the best of times, a stretch of grass, or in that night's case, snow, crossed by raised streets and raised sidewalks. It was torture in winter as the wind shoved at even the sturdiest bodies and ripped at exposed skin. Rumor had it that some years ago, a student stumbled off the sidewalk and rolled down into the midway, where they died and weren't discovered until spring when the snow melted. Jasmine had hugged herself tight and put her head down against the wind. Her eyes streamed, and she squeezed them shut in hopes of blinking back tears that would freeze on her eyelashes. When she fell, she thought it was the wind, slamming against her and throwing her off the sidewalk. She fell to one knee, then to the side, then she was rolling down the hill and slamming against the snowy bottom. The air slapped from her lungs, and she just had time to tell herself to get back up when something else, no, the same thing, slammed against her again, pinned her to the ground and tore at her bag and her coat, her chest and her arms. She was being attacked. Someone was attacking her. She tried to fight them off with her hands, pushing them away, shielding her face and neck, belatedly remembering her keys, fisting her hand again and slashing. She hit and ripped flesh. Her attacker yelped, fell back. She crammed her whistle in her mouth and blew with all her might, with all the air she had left and then some, the shriek tearing at her eardrums. Her attacker fell back in the dark, huddling, and she kept blowing even as spots danced before her eyes. Just when she couldn't take it anymore, her attacker loped away, low to the ground, almost like an animal. She collapsed back into the snow and lay there, until it occurred to her that this guy might have stolen her phone or her computer in the scuffle. She checked her bag, then yelped as it pulled against her shoulder. Her bloody, whistling shoulder. She thought it was a man who'd attacked her until the ER doctor told her it was an animal and given her a round of rabies boosters. Only 7 hours later, Dr. Craig showed up to tell her she'd been right. A person had done this to her. "It's about how I was violated," she said. "And it's about how I have to see his face every month, knowing no punishment was doled out, and he has no problem doing it again and again and again, and everyone here is going to be nice to him and try to make him comfortable, even though he's a predator. It's that I'm going to have to see him every month for the rest of my life because I can't leave this godforsaken city." The silence was back. Bailey took her wrist again, slipped their fingers together, and squeezed. Jasmine pressed her eyes closed. She wasn't going to cry in group. The anger had drained as her rant had poured out from her. It would refill in a while, but for now, it had left a rock formation of hurt and sadness and pain peeking out of the lowered tide. She looked up at Bailey. "How do you do it?" Bailey shrugged. "You think I'm not afraid? Of course I'm mad. Every time he's late, my heart starts pounding so fast I think it might explode. And then every time he comes down the stairs, I get this cold stabbing in my stomach. Like maybe he'll bite me again. I know it's stupid, but it's the way it is. But I'm not mad at the center. I'm not mad they give him a place so he doesn't do this to more girls." "It's not fair," Jasmine said. "Is there something we could do?" Mila asked. She looked at Regina. "Is there a way to keep him separate so the girls don't have to see him?" There wasn't. The center didn't have space for it. Before Regina could say it aloud, set it in stone, Bailey cut in. "You know, I think I'd much rather know where he is. Don't turn your back on a tiger kind of thing." Jasmine said, "I wish they'd keep him locked up at the center all month long. Always know where he is." But that wasn't an option either. The group sat. In thought or in sympathy, there was no way to tell. "Well, look at the bright side," Tony said. "He'll probably die soon." Some people gasped, while others coughed out laughs. Regina said, "Now, Tony." But Jasmine found herself smiling. "Seems to me," Ravi said, "that you've got extra incentive to get out of here." Mila made a note on her phone. "I'll bring a map next week. You bring a list of schools you like. We'll see what we can do." Jasmine said nothing, and the conversation shifted to Ty. True Podcast is written and produced by me, Carolyn Rahman. Music composed by Kamiku. If you like the show, please rate and review on iTunes. Follow the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/20percenttrue, where you can leave comments and ask questions. Check out my website, 20percenttrue.blogspot.com, for updates, thoughts on writing, and book reviews. Or follow me on Twitter at @CarrieAndTheHit.